is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Sign up now for their virtual camp 2.0 featuring 10 days of workouts with pro trainers from the Dr. Dish family. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Tom Heil, head men's basketball coach at Baldwin Wallace University, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Coaches, do you have a point guard or leader you're going to be counting on next season to run the show for you? Don't leave next season to chance. Thousands of coaches send their players to a point guard college camp each summer to learn to think the game, lead a team, and run the show. Your players will be smarter, better leaders, and better equipped to foster a championship culture next season in practice and in your locker room. I've seen firsthand how PGC camps have had a huge impact on players and coaches that I know, both on and off the court. You can go to pgcbasketball.com to find a 5-day, 4-night camp near you. That's pgcbasketball.com.
Once I figured out how to delegate and now trust my guys with the stuff, and once I give it to them, they started to come back to me with the answers. And now it's good. I'm not following behind them to try to get the answer right away. You know, I let them handle it. And then that's when I knew we were successful.
Michael Huger is entering his 7th season as the head men's basketball coach at his alma mater, Bowling Green State University. Huger came to Bowling Green after 4 seasons at the University of Miami. He had spent 8 total seasons as an assistant coach for head coach Jim Larrañaga, whom he played for at BG. Prior to following Larrañaga to Miami, Huger coached 4 seasons at George Mason, where he helped lead the Patriots to the postseason every year. He began his coaching career at Longwood University in Virginia, where he spent 2 seasons. Before joining the coaching ranks, Michael played professional basketball in Europe for 13 years, spending time in Finland, Holland, and Belgium. A native of New York City, Huger is a 1994 graduate of Bowling Green State University, where he was a Naismith Award nominee and the runner-up for MAC Player of the Year as a senior. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Take some notes as you listen to this episode with Michael Huger, head men's basketball coach at Bowling Green State University. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel this morning, but I am pleased to be joined by Michael Huger, head men's basketball coach at Bowling Green State University. Michael, welcome to the Hoopheads Pod.
Thank you for having me, Mike. I really appreciate this.
Absolutely. Excited to have you on. Looking forward to chatting. Want to talk and go back first to when you were a player. Tell us a little bit about
you as a basketball player growing up in New York City, just how you got into the game. And let's just kind of run through your various stops from high school to BG and then to your ability to play as a professional player.
Well, it started, I started playing late actually for New York City. I started playing at 12. So that's late for New York City standards. Those guys are out there at six. And I used to just sit and watch and, you know, kind of played a little bit. And one day one of my friends, Lamont Moultrie, said that the TS Bucks are having tryouts in the cages. Are you coming? And I'll never forget the story. I said, nah, I'm not coming, man. I'm going to play football. He said, football? He was like, man, we don't have no football out here. We don't got no fields or nothing. Where you going to play football at? You scared. And I was like, nah, I'm going to come. I'm scared to death. I ain't want no parts of basketball. And I remember looking out from my window where my mother lives in the projects in Harlem, in Foster Projects. I could see the basketball court. So I see everybody out there. And I said, oh, if I don't go out there, I got to hear Mo and everybody else, you know, tease me for the rest of the time. So I go out. And now I'm probably about this height at 12. I'm probably 6 foot at 12. And I'm the biggest one on the team. I wind up making the team. I'm the 12th man on the team. We're like a local travel team, and we're beating teams by 50 points. And I'm getting in the game just because we went in by 50. I wasn't one of the key guys on that team. I'll tell you that now. That next summer, 13, I kind of just stayed back a little bit. I didn't play as much. I wanted to work on my game to get better. I was just, you know, so frustrated on how good those guys were and how bad I was. So I just started working on my game at 13. And by 14, I'm the best player on the team. So it's like, oh, here we go. I'm the best player on the team. And now at the time in New York City, we basically had two AAU teams. It was the Riverside Church and the New York Gauchos. So those are the only two AAU teams at the time. So I decided to go and play with Riverside Church. My TS Bucks team had broken up. He couldn't, you know, basically hold on to us anymore. And I wound up going to play for Riverside Church and Ernie Lorch. And it was so much fun playing with Riverside. It took me all over the world. I mean, we went to France, you name it. We were all over the United States and played against the best competition. We also had the best team. So it was fun. My teammates were Adrian Autry, who played at Syracuse, Bryant Reese, who played at North Carolina. Myself started. We had Chanel Scott, who played at St. John's, Darryl Barnes, who played at Georgia Tech. So we were loaded. We were all high major basketball players. Wound up going to Adelaide Stevenson in the Bronx, played for Steve Post up there. Was the best experience for me going to play for him. He taught me so much about the game and just discipline. He taught me discipline. And the biggest thing was defense. I was the best scorer on the team as a sophomore. We went to the city championship, lost to Springfield Gardens. Alvin Rich and those guys beat us. We had Billy Singleton, who played at St. John's, and Reggie Galt, who played at Marist. Those were our seniors. And I barely played as a sophomore because I didn't defend. Mr. Post said, man, you're not going to get on this court unless you play defense. So I had to work on my defense. By the time I was a junior, I was better defensively. I was the sixth man on a team that won the city championship. We beat Lincoln High School with Norman Marbury, Stephon Marbury's older brother. So we wound up beating them in the championship. And then the following year as a senior, I started. Averaged 20 points. I was the first player that Steve Post coached that averaged 20. Now, we had Ed Pickney, Fred Brown, all these guys that he coached, and I'm the first to average 20 points. I mean, I can score, but I really wasn't interested in defense until Mr. Post told me about that. Got a scholarship to play here at Bowling Green. Played here for Jim Larranaga, who's also from the Bronx, from Parkchester in the Bronx. Went to Malloy, and this was his first head coaching job here at Bowling Green. He knew Mr. Larch and Mr. Post. So he knew those guys well and built a great relationship with them. I had a lot of those schools recruit me, Providence, Seton Hall, Temple, you name it. They were there. But I just felt like Coach Larranaga was telling me the truth. He told me, you know, everything you get here at Bowling Green will be earned, nothing to be given. And that was like the first sign of truth. You know, I had Calipari at UMass. I had some, you know, Rick Barnes was at Providence. PJ Colissimo was at Seton Hall. John Chaney was at Temple. So it was like, you know, you have all these big name coaches already. And I just chose, I felt Bowling Green was the best fit for me and the best place for me. And came out here, had a great career playing here, all conference my junior and senior year. was actually runner-up player of the year to Gary Trent. Gary Trent beat me. Most of these guys will know Gary Trent Jr., his son. He was a freshman when I was a senior. I thought I had it in the bag. You know, my team, everything, I'm playing well, having a great senior year, and they gave it to him. I was highly upset for about 3 years, and then he became like the 13th pick in the NBA draft, and it was like, all right
maybe it was something maybe, I didn't maybe know. Maybe they were right. Yeah.
I said they knew something I didn't know at that time. So, you know, got over that. That was fun. Had a great opportunity to go play overseas in Europe. During my junior year in college, we went to Holland and played in something called the Harlem Basketball Week out in Holland. And over there, agent saw me play. And then right at the end of my senior year, I got a call and asked, was I still interested in playing? I'm like, if y'all going to pay me to have fun, of course, I'm willing to play. So played my first year out in Finland, Turku, Finland. Great experience to go. I've been to Europe before, playing Riverside Church and playing at Bowling Green, been to Holland and France, and, you know, but never to Finland. So to get out there to see it, it was incredible. I mean, just going out, I remember the sun came up at 11 a.m. and went down at 1 p.m. We had 2 hours of sunlight, and it wasn't really sunlight. It was kind of hazy. It was like, yeah, it wasn't the good stuff. So, I mean, it was incredible to be out there. We played in a tournament. I remember at the beginning of the year, it's called Lapland. It's at the top of Finland. And it was night the whole time. I mean, you just see the moon go around a building and, like, you know, it's like super fast. It was just incredible. We go back out there in the spring to play again. And then the sun is up the whole time. It's like, oh, my goodness, this is crazy. I mean, it's almost you would never imagine this in your wildest dreams on how incredible this scene was. Had a great career in Finland, spent 2 years in Holland, played in Harkham, a small town, and I played in Rotterdam, which was the bigger town out in the Netherlands. Had a great time there. Wound up playing 9 years in Belgium. I spent 4 in Antwerp, Belgium, spent 1 on the coast, Ypres, and then I spent 4 on the French part of Belgium, was Liège. And one summer I came back early. And I'm seeing, like, I can't even get into my building and wondering, like, what's going on? The Tour de France starts in Liège, Belgium. I never knew that. I played there for about 3 years before I found out the Tour de France started in Liège, Belgium. So it was a lot of fun just to see that and, you know, kind of hang out down there. Started my career. I got a call from one of my assistant coaches, Steve Murfell, who's now with Creighton. He had just became the head coach at Hampton. If you remember the little fellow who won, I think they were like a 15 seed and they beat Iowa State. Second seed. Steve Murfell was my assistant coach here at Bowling Green. And he called me when I was playing overseas. I was about 28. I just signed a 2-year deal to go back to Antwerp. He offered me the job to come work for him at Hampton. He offered me $35,000 to go and work for him. I'm like, man, I'm almost making that a month. I'm not going out here. Like, you know, I said, I just signed a 2-year deal. He said, well, come with me. Come hang out with me. I'll be in Teaneck, New Jersey. Just come hang out with me down there. We're watching ABCD camp and you know, just come see what you think. I went down there and, like, knew everybody, all the assistant coaches, guys I played against in high school, guys I played against overseas, guys I played against in college. They all were coaching. And I'm like, whoa, you know, like, this might be something, you know. And he gave me like a piece of paper and said, write down who I liked and write some notes about him. And I did that and turned it into him at the end of the day. And he liked what I wrote down. And he said, you know, well, what do you think about coaching? And I was like, I don't know if I really want to coach. You know, this was fun, but I don't know. He said, what do you want to do? You can't play forever. And I said, well, when I'm done, I think I want to teach or something. I can't be in an office. You know, I think I would want to teach and be around people. He said, well, what about coaching? I was like, I don't really think I want to coach. He said, well, coaching is teaching. Coaching is teaching the game of basketball. And I never thought of coaching in that regard. And once he said that, I was like, this might be on to something. So around 32, I tried to get into coaching, called a couple of the, you know, my assistants. Anthony Solomon was a head coach by then. He was the head coach at St. Bonaventure's. Mark Averone was the head coach at Memphis Grizzlies at the time. Coach Larinaga was at George Mason. So it was, you know, having this opportunity to get into coaching. And nothing popped. Everybody, hey, we don't have anything. And, you know, I said, all right, I'm going to go play another year. And I go back and play another year. The next year happens. Hey, nothing happens again. I said, all right, I'm going to go play one more year. At 34, I get married. My wife, married my wife, Tanya, who I met here at Bowling Green. Once we got married, I tried to get into coaching again and nothing popped. So I went back overseas again and was married, but she stayed back. And I said, man, I can't do this another year. You know, this is my last go round, and, you know, I got to find something. And then we go from there. That summer, 2005, Coach Larrañaga calls me and said, hey, Michael, I got a job opened up. He told me everything about the job. He told me the salary, everything. I'm so excited. Like, yes. You know, he's like, yeah, George Mason. And we're talking. And then at the end of that conversation, he said, but I can't hire you. He said, I need somebody with experience who can coach the D.C. area, who can get and recruit the D.C. area. And he wound up hiring James Johnson as an assistant that year. They actually go to the Final Four that year. And it was just an incredible run. He calls me about a week later after he talked about the job and said, hey, one of my former assistants, Mike Gillian, has a job opened up in Longwood. Would you be interested? They're just transforming to Division One, and would you be interested in the job? And I'm like, yeah, coach, I definitely don't want to go back overseas, you know? So I said, of course I'm interested in the job. My wife, Tanya, and I, we were living in Buffalo at the time, but I was down in New York City visiting my parents. And we drove to Longwood. It was about a 7-hour drive to Longwood down in Farmville, Virginia. And I just remember meeting Mike Gillian, having a great conversation. He offered me the job on the spot. He offered me $19,000 was my first salary. And I was the happiest person on earth to get $19,500. And that was really what I was making a month. Like, I'm making this a month for sure. So it was so much fun to go down and coach. And Mike Gillian, Doug Tebow, Bill Ryerson, those guys taught me everything about college coaching. I knew nothing about college coaching and none of the stuff. Skill development. Mike Gillian said, just teaching the stuff that you did as a player. Just do everything you did as a player with your workouts, do it with our guys. And I wound up getting really good at skill development. It was awesome. He said, I want you just to go to New York and you know everybody there. Just recruit New York. So I wound up recruiting New York, New Jersey, from Jeff Bryant to Duran Neal, all these guys out of New York, New Jersey. I just stayed in New York, New Jersey. In 2 years, I wound up recruiting maybe 4 or 5 players to Longwood. So I felt good about that situation. 2 years go by. Coach Larrañaga calls. He has a job opening. I wound up going down and getting an interview with Coach Larrañaga in 2007 season. My wife and I, we were driving actually down to Cleveland to see her parents, and we had to pass through George Mason. He called right after we passed the exit and said, hey, Mike, what are you doing? I was like, nothing, coach. We're not doing anything. He said, well, why don't you come up and bring your wife, Tanya? I would like to meet your wife, Tanya. So we wound up turning around off the exit, going back to George Mason, sitting there talking with Coach Larrañaga. We were having a great time. And he asked my wife at the time, he said, Tanya, why should I hire Michael? And I'm like, oh, Lord, why did he ask her that? You know, so she said, you see this book here on your decks? It was a book called Good to Great. She said, do you remember the line in the book where he said, get the right people on the bus and then decide where you're going? Well, Michael is the right person to get on your bus. Now you have to decide where you're going. Coach Young said, I love that. You should have said that, Michael. I'd have hired you right away. So he wound up hiring me. I spent 4 years with Coach Larrañaga at George Mason. We wound up going. We made 2 NCAA tournament appearances. My first year, we made it down. We lost to Notre Dame in the first round. The next year, we make it through. I recruited a kid, Luke Hancock. And Luke Hancock was a kid from Roanoke, Virginia. Kevin Keats coached him at Hargrave Military Academy. He called me, said, I got a kid. Why don't you come down, take a look at him? Came down, took a look at Luke Hancock, fell in love. Like, oh, this kid is what we need, exactly what we need. Tell Coach L. Coach L was kind of like, don't know. I said, Coach, if you don't listen to anything else I say in college coaching, we got to take this kid, Luke Hancock. He is very good. We wound up taking Luke. Get him to campus. Yeah, a little shaky to begin. And it's like, I don't know what we're going to do with him. We scrimmaged Georgetown. Luke has 20 points, 10 rebounds, and 5 assists. Coach L was like, we're going to start him. Everything changes. So he wound up starting, leads us to a championship his sophomore year. We play Villanova in the first round. We were the first CAA team to be an 8 seed and played a 9 seed Villanova in the first round. We wound up beating Villanova in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Luke Hancock hits a step back 3 to win the game. I mean, like, incredible. That next year, we wound up going to Miami. We go to Miami, and we have one scholarship left. We tried to get Luke Hancock, but we didn't get him. We wound up taking a kid named Shane Larkin, and the rest is history. We had Shane there. I remember getting down to Miami. The people around Miami said, is 3 things we'll never do. We'll never beat Duke. We'll never beat Carolina. And we'll never win an ACC championship. We did all of that within the next 2 years. So it was a great experience down in Miami. Wound up spending 4 years down there. Won the ACC championship in 2013, regular season and tournament. Was the number 2 seed. We had the highest ranking of a Miami team at the time. Just so much fun being down in Miami and getting to experience that. Had an opportunity to come here to Bowling Green in 2015. Went through the interview process. I just remember having fun going through that interview process of getting to know the people again and seeing the guys that I haven't seen in years. Wound up getting a job. I remember the night Chris Kingston was the athletic director at the time. I remember he gave me the call and he gave me the whole spiel about the team and told me everything about the team. And at the end of all of this, we spoke for maybe 45 minutes before the end of the conversation. He said, is there anything preventing you from becoming the next head coach at Bowling Green State University? And I was like, yes, you know, this is it. We got it. I went in, my wife and son Michael were in the bed sleep, and I told her we just got Bowling Green. She was very, very excited about that. We both went to school here, Bowling Green. She's from Cleveland, getting her close to home, and me from New York is, you know, probably about a 8-hour drive to New York, where Miami was a flight. Everywhere we went, it was a flight in Miami. So a lot of fun just getting that opportunity to get back here at my alma mater. Things have changed since I've been back. They built up campus. We have a new arena, the Stroh Center. We played in Anderson Arena. Very nice. We had a chance to sell it out. We beat the 18th ranked team in the country, Buffalo, here. It's just been a great experience to be back and well taken care of. I mean, it's just a blessing to be back here at Bowling Green. I'm so excited to get back to work this year, especially after COVID last year. And now we have an opportunity. We have 6 new guys coming in and just getting ready to go to work and have fun with it.
Hey, hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com/teampricing to learn more. That's ARYSE.com.
What are the things that you've built your program on there at Bowling Green? When you walked in the door and you were like, okay, I'm taking over for the first time as a head coach and I want to put my stamp, I want to build this program in the image that I've had in my mind. Because obviously, as you're an assistant coach, I'm sure in the back of your head, you had it in your mind that at some point, I'm going to get an opportunity to be a head coach. It's something that was on your radar. So when you finally get that opportunity, what does that look like? What do you have to come in and do? What do you see when you initially walk in the door in order to know that you're going to be able to have a successful program moving forward?
The biggest thing was the culture. We had to change the culture, and that was from the bottom up. That was everything about it we had to change. And we have a simple philosophy: attitude, commitment, class. That's it. Attitude. Life is 10% what happens to you and 90% how you react to it. Commitment. Make a total and unconditional commitment to our program, to our families, to getting better, to our academics. Class. Always carry yourself in a first class manner. You never get a second chance to make a first impression. Those are the things that we live by. Those are the things we had to clean up. So when I say it's from the bottom up, where like no do-rags on campus. And you know what I mean? Like, it's like, we had to clean up everything. Pull your pants up. I mean, like, you name it, we had to clean it up. And discipline. We had to have discipline from start to finish. So those are the things that we had to start. And it's always getting that trust of the players. For me, going into my situation, I was the third coach in 3 years. So now it's like, hey, I heard this before from this coach. I heard this before. Are you the real deal? Are you going to do what you say you're going to do? And then I had to prove it. So that's making guys sit out, making guys run from not going to class, missing study hall, missing a training session that you're supposed to be in. I'm making you run. You're missing games. It's all. And then it's like, dude, is the real deal. But I also care about you. I want you to get your degree. I'm the one that's going to put my arm around you after all of this stuff. You know what I mean? I'm going to tell you what you need to hear. I'm telling you the truth. I'm not going to lie to you and tell you what you want to hear. I'm going to tell you the truth. And can you handle the truth? So those are the things we had to clean up from start. I mean, very from the day go, you know what I mean? And that was the thing. So once we got that cleaned up, the culture started to change. We started to win. We started to win games. We started to win the right way. And then we had the younger guys, older guys teaching the younger guys. And we didn't have that coming in. I had to kind of do it all. My assistants are learning me still. So it's like, we're all in this together. And once we got it rolling, then it was good. Success was right there. We had, like I said, our older guys teaching our younger guys. And it's been really, really good so far. So it hasn't been any issues. Guys have been holding each other accountable. And now it's not me holding them accountable. They're holding each other accountable. So it's been great.
Absolutely. I think when you can get that player-led team and put the culture in their hands, that's when you really start seeing a difference. When you're having to do it all, obviously that tires you out too as a coach. You can only be that guy for so long. You got to put that in the hands of the players and have them take over. And then you're in a much better spot. Go ahead.
And also as an assistant, you're so used to doing everything on your own. You're not used to delegating. So as when I first came in, I'm trying to do everything. And I'm just dead tired. I'm coming home. My wife's like, you all right? It's like, yeah, man, I just need to go to sleep right now. I just need some rest. I mean, it's tiring. So once I figured out how to delegate and now trust my guys with the stuff. And once I give it to them, they started to come back to me with the answers. And now it's good. I'm not following behind them to try to get the answer right away. You know, I let them handle it. And then that's when I knew we were successful.
What's the thing that you can't delegate or you don't want to delegate? What's the thing that's most important to you that you have to have your hands on a daily basis?
That's a good question. This is year 7 for me now. Didn't have a lot of turnaround. This is the first year that I had turnaround with new coaches. So the last thing actually I let go was the discipline. I was still the guy that discipline the guys. I enjoyed that part of it because I also enjoy hugging them at the end of it. Like, you know why I made you run, right? Or you know why we doing this, right? And so that part made it fun. That was the last thing I would say I gave up with, was that, you know, everybody else has their job to do. And I also have, you know, a million things going on, but the discipline was probably the hardest thing for me because that's what I did with Coach Larry Nagel. I did that at George Mason. I did it at Miami. So that was a hard thing to kind of let go was that part.
What's the biggest challenge that you see moving forward?
The biggest challenge right now is our recovery from COVID. Having a COVID year, we struggled at home. We were really good on the road, but at home we struggled because we got used to that fan atmosphere, having the fans in the building and that energy that they brought to the Stroh Center, and we lived off of that. So in the last 2 years, we probably lost 2 games at home. And you know, last year alone, we probably lost 7, maybe, you know? So it's like, goodness gracious. So the biggest challenge is, can we get that back? Can we get that back, what we've built the last 2 years? Can we get it back? And that's probably my biggest challenge right now, along with the fact that I got 6 new guys and trying to implement those guys into our system and the way that we play. But the beauty of having that, I only lost 1 player from last year's team. So now we got all these guys back and plus 6 new guys. So it's easy because our older guys, like I said, will be teaching our younger guys. So that helps us out tremendously.
All right, last question for you, Michael. What is your biggest joy when you wake up in the morning? What's the one thing that makes you the happiest, puts a smile on your face, being the head coach at Bowling Green?
The thing that makes me, I have a couple things. I'll share a couple with you. The thing that makes me the happiest when I wake up in the morning is having my wife and son being able to share this moment with me of being in everything, being involved in the program from start to finish, you know, so that part has been fun for me. But the most fun is getting up and coming into work every day. Is, you know, I talk to our guys. That's, you know, one saying that I've heard is choose a job that you love and you'll never work a day in your life. I haven't worked in, I would say, at least 41 years, you know? So it's that much fun to go. I mean, this is so much fun to go in and coach the guys and mold these young men. And then you see them 5 years later and they have families and they're married and they're still playing professional basketball and they're doing well. And you say, like, I done something right. I did something right with these guys. They have their degrees. They're able to play professional basketball. If not, they're able to get good jobs when it's all said and done. And I felt like me and my staff had a big part of these guys' success. And that's the joy that I get is when I see them years later or when I get that invite to their wedding and, hey, I'm getting married in this day. And, you know, I can't make the wedding, but I'll send them a gift or something like that. So that's probably the most joy I have is the end result of what the work that we put in here at Bowling Green and Miami and George Mason and Longwood.
Yeah, absolutely. I think those relationships with players, and a lot of times, again, we all get judged by success on the floor in the moment. But ultimately, you think about that 10 years, 20 years down the road, what your guys are able to accomplish in their life as human beings really ends up being an important piece of your success as a coach, which can't obviously be measured in the moment. You only see that as you look back retrospectively, which I know makes anybody who's coached, you know, when you get that phone call and on the other end of the line, somebody says, hey, coach, there's nothing better when they're sharing something great from their life. That's just one of the biggest joys that any of us who have coached kids in the past have had. I just think it's, you know, it's something that every coach loves to be a part of. So, Michael, I cannot thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule today to jump on with us. Really, really appreciate it. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening. And we'll catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.